državni izpitni center.
Splošna matura 2011.
Preverjanje slušnega razumevanja.
Lepo pozdravljeni. Pričenja se reševanje maturitetne izpitne pole slušnega razumevanja angleščine.
Izpitna pola je sestavljena iz dveh delov, dela A in dela B. Vsak del vsebuje govorjeno izhodiščno besedilo in nalogo, ki se nanj nanaša. Najprej boste nalogo prebrali, nato boste poslušali besedilo in lahko že med poslušanjem nalogo sproti reševali. Vsako besedilo boste poslušali po dvakrat. Začetek in konec besedila bo označeval takle zvočni znak.
Rešitve, ki jih pišite z nalivnim peresom ali s kemičnim svinčnikom, vpisujte v izpitno polo v zato predvideni prostor. Pišite čitljivo. Če se zmotite, napisano prečrtajte in rešitev zapišite na novo. Nečitljivi zapisi in nejasni popravki bodo ocenjeni z nič točkami.
Po reševanju obeh delov, dela A in dela B, boste imeli minuto časa, da izpolnite še list za odgovore pri nalogi A. Če boste pri tej nalogi pri posameznih postavkah izbrali več odgovorov, bodo ocenjeni z nič točkami.
Zaupajte vase in v svoje zmožnosti. Želimo vam veliko uspeha.
Poslušajte pozorno. Odprite izpitno polo.
Section A. You will hear an interview about Transylvania. As you listen to the recording, tick the appropriate column below, then complete the answer sheet according to the instructions on it. You will hear the recording twice. Now read through the statements.
Traditions of many kinds run deep in Romania. Romans, Hungarians, German Saxons, Bulgarians and more have all left their mark on the food culture, a culture that's now under threat. So along with the Prince of Wales, a range of organisations are helping to turn tradition into business. One of them is the ADEPT Foundation, a project that's had backing from both the Romanian and UK governments. One of its directors is Jim Turnbull. I asked him to spell out why food and farming in Transylvania deserves special attention.
Well, Transylvania is a place that a lot of people think is created as a Disney film set, so a lot of people are quite amazed to find that it's a real place in a real country. And it has this amazing history and culture of the Saxons going over many centuries, creating a wonderful working landscape. Very rich in biodiversity, wildflower, hay meadows, the last remaining such meadows in Europe. And the people who live there are totally self-sufficient. They're very poor in monetary terms, but they are self-sufficient in food. And one of the great joys of there is the quality, the taste of the food, the quality of the ingredients. I don't think you would say you went there necessarily for the local cuisine, but for the quality of the ingredients. The flavours are just magic.
Now, Ceausescu was one of the very worst of a very bad bunch of dictators. How did this area survive?
He had, in fact, collectivized it to some extent, but nothing as much as in other parts of Romania. He had, in fact, signed orders to bulldoze all the villages just some 6 months before the revolution, so it was very close.
So it was almost gone. It's under threat now. Why?
After the revolution, 1990-91... About 80% of the Saxons seized an opportunity to return to a reunified Germany. And almost overnight, Marie Celeste style, Saxons, whole families disappeared back to Germany.
Even though they'd been living in Romania for centuries?
Indeed. When they had the opportunity to leave, they took it.
So you've got depopulation.
The other threats include the intensification of agriculture, now being helped along with grants from the EU. Intensification could mean the ploughing of the meadows, the application of fertilisers, chemicals.
But as you said, these people are very poor. Presumably they want these benefits of belonging to the European Union, which is Romania now is a member of the EU.
They definitely want to get the benefits. They want to earn a living. Most of them would rather stay in their own village rather than to move into towns or to Western Europe to seek employment.
And so food and food businesses are being seen as the main solution. How is that going to work?
Now you will hear the recording again.
Traditions of many kinds run deep in Romania. Romans, Hungarians, German Saxons, Bulgarians and more have all left their mark on the food culture, a culture that's now under threat. So along with the Prince of Wales, a range of organisations are helping to turn tradition into business. One of them is the ADEPT Foundation, a project that's had backing from both the Romanian and UK governments. One of its directors is Jim Turnbull. I asked him to spell out why food and farming in Transylvania deserves special attention.
Well, Transylvania is a place that a lot of people think is created as a Disney film set, so a lot of people are quite amazed to find that it's a real place and a real country. And it has this amazing history and culture of the Saxons going over many centuries, creating a wonderful working landscape. Very rich in biodiversity, wildflower, hay meadows, the last remaining such meadows in Europe. And the people who live there are totally self-sufficient. They're very poor in monetary terms, but they are self-sufficient in food. And one of the great joys of there is the quality, the taste of the food, the quality of the ingredients. I don't think you would say you went there necessarily for the local cuisine, but for the quality of the ingredients. The flavours are just magic.
Now, Ceausescu was one of the very worst of a very bad bunch of dictators. How did this area survive?
He had, in fact, collectivized it to some extent, but nothing as much as in other parts of Romania. He had, in fact, signed orders to bulldoze all the villages just some 6 months before the revolution, so it was very close.
So it was almost gone. It's under threat now. Why?
After the revolution, 1990-91... about 80% of the Saxons seized an opportunity to return to a reunified Germany. And almost overnight, Marie Celeste style, Saxons, whole families disappeared back to Germany.
Even though they'd been living in Romania for centuries?
Indeed. When they had the opportunity to leave, they took it.
So you've got depopulation?
The other threats include the intensification of agriculture, now being helped along with grants from the EU. Intensification could mean the ploughing of the meadows, the application of fertilisers, chemicals.
But as you said, these people are very poor. Presumably they want these benefits of belonging to the European Union, which is Romania now is a member of the EU.
They definitely want to get the benefits. They want to earn a living. Most of them would rather stay in their own village rather than to move into towns or to Western Europe to seek employment.
And so food and food businesses are being seen as the main solution. How is that going to work?
This is the end of Section A. Section B. You will hear an interview with Warwick Thornton about his latest film. As you listen to the recording, write your answers in note form in the spaces below. Use 1 to 5 words for each answer. You will hear the recording twice. Now read through the questions.
Samson and Delilah is set in the central Australian desert, where a pair of Aboriginal teenagers are slowly drawn together in a tiny, isolated community. They escape, but the nearest town doesn't welcome them, and their chances of happiness or even of staying alive are threatened by poverty and Samson's addiction to sniffing solvents. Warwick Thornton, who wrote and directed, was also the cinematographer, using the Australian landscape as character in the drama, an approach that won him the Camera d'Or Award at the Cannes Festival last year. When he came into the studio, I asked Warwick Thornton if this love story was as much about survival as romance.
You can't make a film about two teenagers falling in love in Central Australia, being Aboriginal, without the issues and the neglect and, you know, all those sort of trappings of that kind of existence.
And where did you start with it? Was it with a central idea? Was it with a location? Was it with characters?
It was anger, actually. It was the only time you'd ever hear about Samson and Delilah, those kind of kids, was on the 5 o'clock news, and it was very fleeting, and they were always a problem, and they were always an issue. And there was a fire inside of me about, I want to write a film about these two beautiful kids falling in love and how, you know, human they can actually be.
So the kind of instance that might be recorded on the 5 o'clock news would be what?
Breaking and entering, substance abuse. What are we going to do with all these sort of homeless kids? They're sort of in the way. They're scaring the tourists.
You do deal with those things, but you deal with them. They're in a sense the background to the important story. So did you, if you started with that kind of anger, how soon did the characters come to you?
Very, very quickly, because I just sort of draw on my life growing up in that same town. I left school incredibly early, spent a lot of time on the streets. When I was 17, a door was opened and I found cinema. I had to write from some form of truth, and the truth came from in me. There's nothing in that film that I haven't seen personally growing up.
One of the things that is quite arresting from the beginning is that Samson, you know, sniffs various substances, whether it's petrol or solvents or some stage, we don't even know quite what it is. But that's absolutely part of his daily routine. I mean, it's not presented in a kind of judgmental way.
No, it's existence in a sense. You know, I never wanted to make that a judgmental thing. We all have poisons and we all have demons in a sense. And it was very important right from the first frame of the film to show his demons so that we could get over them and get down to the nitty-gritty of falling in love, in a sense.
And your actors were completely inexperienced at the stage where you made this?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, they're inexperienced on the set, but, you know, 13 years. Both of them were 13 when we made the film, and both of them grew up in very similar communities to what we portray in the film. So sort of 13 years of research and rehearsal, in a sense. It was interesting, you know, talking to Rowan McNamara, who plays Samson, and saying, you know, you're a petrol sniffer, you're a complete run amok, you fight with your brother, your mother's not there. And he was like, oh, yeah, OK, yeah.
And does it mean when you're directing very young actors who have no previous experience that it takes a little longer for you to follow through the script or the storyline that you had?
Rowan can't read, so, you know, that's a basic thing, that he couldn't actually read the script. The script is incredibly intricate, and, you know, every look is written into the script.
It's intricate more in what you show rather than there being huge amounts of dialogue.
Now you will hear the recording again.
Samson and Delilah is set in the central Australian desert, where a pair of Aboriginal teenagers are slowly drawn together in a tiny, isolated community. They escape, but the nearest town doesn't welcome them, and their chances of happiness or even of staying alive are threatened by poverty and Samson's addiction to sniffing solvents. Warwick Thornton, who wrote and directed, was also the cinematographer, using the Australian landscape as character in the drama, an approach that won him the Camera d'Or Award at the Cannes Festival last year. When he came into the studio, I asked Warwick Thornton if this love story was as much about survival as romance.
You can't make a film about two teenagers falling in love in Central Australia, being Aboriginal, without the issues and the neglect and, you know, all those sort of trappings of that kind of existence.
And where did you start with it? Was it with a central idea? Was it with a location? Was it with characters?
It was anger, actually. It was the only time you'd ever hear about Samson and Delilah, those kind of kids, was on the 5 o'clock news, and it was very fleeting, and they were always a problem, and they're always an issue. And there was a fire inside of me about, I want to write a film about these two beautiful kids falling in love and how, you know, human they can actually be.
So the kind of instance that might be recorded on the 5 o'clock news would be what?
Breaking and entering, substance abuse. What are we going to do with all these sort of homeless kids? They're sort of in the way. They're, you know, they're scaring the tourists.
You do deal with those things, but you deal with them. They're in a sense the background to the important story. So did you, if you started with that kind of anger, how soon did the characters come to you?
Very, very quickly, because I just sort of drawed on my life growing up in that same town. I left school incredibly early, spent a lot of time on the streets. When I was 17, a door was opened and I found cinema. I had to write from some form of truth, and the truth came from in me. There's nothing in that film that I haven't seen personally growing up.
One of the things that is quite arresting from the beginning is that Samson, you know, sniffs various substances, whether it's petrol or solvents or some sort of, we don't even know quite what it is. But that's absolutely part of his daily routine. I mean, it's not presented in a kind of judgmental way.
No, it's existence in a sense. You know, I never wanted to make that a judgmental thing. We all have poisons and we all have demons in a sense. And it was very important right from the first frame of the film to show his demons so that we could get over them and get down to the nitty-gritty of falling in love, in a sense.
And your actors were completely inexperienced at the stage where you made this?
Well, they're inexperienced on the set, but, you know, 13 years. Both of them were 13 when we made the film, and both of them grew up in very similar communities to what we portray in the film. So sort of 13 years of research and rehearsal, in a sense. It was interesting, you know, talking to Rowan McNamara, who plays Samson, and saying, you know, you're a petrol sniffer, you're a complete run amok, you fight with your brother, your mother's not there. And he was like, oh, yeah, OK, yeah.
And does it mean when you're directing very young actors who have no previous experience that it takes a little longer for you to follow through the script or the storyline that you had?
Rowan can't read, so, you know, that's a basic thing, that he couldn't actually read the script. The script is incredibly intricate, and, you know, every look is written into the script.
It's intricate more in what you show rather than there being huge amounts of dialogue.
This is the end of section B.
Zdaj imate še minuto časa, da izpolnite list za odgovore pri nalogi A.
Končuje se slušno preverjanje angleščine. Nehajte pisati, zaprite izpitno polo in jo skupaj z listom za odgovore položite na rob mize.
Nasvidenje in srečno!